hairdos.
Yeah.
Like, you think your own hairdo is, like, if you're not having a good hair day, it looks the same to other people, but to you, you can tell. You know what I mean?
Wonder where that came from.
Well, you asked about the hair before we started here.
I know. I'm actually, someone commented the other day.
I know, I see him.
Did you see it? Yeah. Said something about it's
crazy hair.
Crazy hair on me or something like that. It was like a joke.
Yeah, I love
he
it.
He knows I'm sensitive.
I think you have great hair.
I don't.
You could be bald.
I don't like it.
You could be bald. Would that be better or worse?
So could you.
I know. I'll never be bald.
Well, your dad's got a head of hair on
her. My mom.
Well, she's a lady, though.
Yeah, but she still has a thick head of hair.
What a head of hair on her.
My dad.
My dad's goes right down to his eyebrows.
I have all my hair went on my head and my eyebrows. That's all my hair. Everything else is, I look
naked.
Oh,
yeah.
I look like I'm,
like a baby.
I look like I'm freshly waxed.
Right.
All right. Do you have anything to say or do you want me to just go?
Well, I officially about 15 minutes ago wrapped up any session I'm doing this summer and I was, and I'm unbelievably exhausted, but I have more energy right now that it's over. You know, when you see that finish line?
Yeah, you just hit the line.
It was, and we had great sessions today. I only had a couple hours, but now, you know, I was getting cranky because it's like, it always seems like it's like 1 week too long.
Yeah, every year. Yeah.
And, anyways, this week I was dragging my ass everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Now I feel a little bit better, but I was, as I said that, I feel like falling asleep too. So if I'm, if I sound like I just fell off the turnip truck, that's why. but really enjoyed it. And last thing before we wrap that up is had a talk with a couple of my players, and maybe it's because I'm getting older, but I'm just looking at a couple of kids. I pulled the one over. I go, do you realize how long we've been skating together? Good kid.
Yeah, great kid.
Him and his brother, great kids. So anyways, he goes, yeah. I said, no, but it's been a long time, man. Like, is he 7? No, he's 16 right now.
Yeah, when did he start? He was 10?
Maybe earlier, but let's say 10. Let's say around there. And to see a kid grow up, right? Like, and now he's like turning into a really, really nice hockey player, doing things well. And that's basically what I was saying. So now it's like, that's a lot of, we got a lot of roots, and I really enjoy being able to talk like that to the kids because it's like, it's so true. Like you could go through this thing and this is something, this is not to be a coach right now, but it's actually, it's the joy is seeing the fruits of your labor over a long period of time. So I think that's why it's so special to have good relationships with the players.
Yeah.
Because who, you know, when you have kids, you don't know who's going to be someone that you just really enjoy having around, or, you know, you watch the progress and you see the hard work, you see the frustration of a kid, you see ups and downs and all these things. And to see, it's not a finished product by any means, but to see someone coming in their teenage years, a late birthday, that's going to have some opportunity. It's like really nice to see, but like, I don't like to say, but more importantly, it's really good to see a kid be a great hockey player, but just a good kid.
Yeah.
And then you have roots, and it's like, that's what makes everything so special, right?
Yeah.
It's training a player is one thing, but being able to like have emotions, you know, bring a tear to a glass eye. but it is like, I'm being very sincere about that.
Yeah.
It's like, that's at the end of the day, when you're gassed and you've got absolutely nothing else to give, it seems it's like, that's the fumes you run on, because you care about this person and you want to make them better and you want to give them the best. And that's, you know, so like, I could actually say I left, for me as a coach, it's not the same as a player, but I left everything on that ice. Like everything I could possibly do, it's out there and I got nothing left. But it brought my energy level up because it's like, okay, it's that reminder again of why I coach. That's the truth. That's the reminder of why I coach or why I train. It's not so I have a mansion, because I don't. but it's not because of that. And that's just a side benefit of I make my living at it. But the real truth to it is, like, at the end of the day, is your players, right? And the relationships that you build. And I know that a lot of times you hear coaches and GMs and stuff like that, and people like that speak this way, and it's easy to dismiss what they mean because it sounds like a cliche. But for me, and I think probably means a lot to a lot of people, is that is actually what it is at the end of the day. When you've got nothing left, there's something left because you got someone that you could help. And that's the biggest reward that I can personally get.
Yeah, I got the same feel, man. It's nice when you have a core group, kids that have been around for a while, that they trust you
and they get you.
You know, they get it, they understand, and it's that relationship part that you've built over years. Because the same thing with me, like I was 7 when I started skating with you, right? And now I get to look, and I'm starting to see kids like from, I guess, really Charlie's age group, because that was like the first year of
for me
when I really started doing this full time, the 05s. And now I'm like, we're like kind of buddies, a lot of them. And it's nice because it's like you actually care about the kid. It's like you want them to do well. And then, like you said, it's my favorite thing is just seeing, it's like, man, you're just a freaking good kid. Like, I just like having you around, you know?
Yeah.
That's the best part.
And the beautiful thing about it is that you do have not all the influence, but you have some. You have some things that sway their mindset, and you know, you're somewhat of a role model, or maybe a lot. And that's the part that, you know, as I'm thinking about this, it's like when I get a new kid out, and you know that they're only here for a one off, it's just not the same. It's just hockey at that point. It's like, because there's no relationship to build. It's not like it's disappointing, but it's not the level that you want to have, because it's there really is no reason to have a trust factor or anything like that. Or there's the investment that you make in that person is only hockey at that point, right? You get to see someone a couple times, and that's fine. But I wouldn't think it would be a rewarding business if we went to just popped in different cities and did one day here and there and not have a relationship. It makes a big difference to have a relationship.
Yeah. Well, I think
to see a kid's improvement, right?
Yeah, for sure. But mm-hmm. Even that, like from the player side, like coming to a place like this, that's why I think for me personally as a coach or whatever, I value loyalty so much, because it makes me feel like from my perspective, I'm making a investment that is worthwhile, because I'll be able to see this kid through. And when you get the kid that jumps around place to place, and there's a fine line, because I don't want to say don't go try, like, because you need other trainers and you need to see other things, and all that stuff can be true. But from my perspective, I like the loyalty thing, because it makes me feel like the investment I'm making as a coach, because I do care so much, is actually worth it, you know? And I think of the, like, an example of that, I'll use their names because I know they wouldn't care, is the McPherson twins, because they do other things. But everything always comes back, like, through you or me. Like, we have discussions about it, we talk about it, we make sure it's part of their development plan. And like, even they landed there in BC now, they're still texting me back and forth. I'm going to call them on the weekend. I'm going to see them in BC in a week or whatever, because I feel like I've invested in them and they've invested in me as a coach too, you know? So that two-way relationship, it's really something worth thinking about as parents when you're going to camps or getting a trainer. If it's somebody that you know is quality and know is quality to the best of your ability, it's that loyalty thing it's a big deal for trainers, because I'll speak for myself, but I know it's kind of for you too. It's like you feel like it's reciprocal. Like, I'm investing in you, you're investing in me, and now we've formed a relationship and we can see that improvement over time. And, you know, that's where you get a kid where you see from 10 to 16, like you're talking about, where it's like, okay, I want to just keep helping this kid. You know, so there's something to be said for that kind of relationship too, you know?
Well, like, just having a conversation, like, if you work with someone for a month, you can see progress or you don't, but you can see some progress. But when you see a long-term progression, you can actually see, like, on a deep level how much they've actually improved, like, and what you can do. So, like, you talk to someone, I like to say this to kids all the time, when they get a little bit frustrated or they're not unsure of where they're going to end up, it's like, go back to, okay, let's go back to when you were 10 and now you're 16. Look at the dramatic change that's made, and if you continue to do it, like, what else can happen? Come on in, bud. What else can happen in the next 5 years if you keep plugging away, right? But it's a true progression. It's an actual conversation, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you very much, Kettle.
Thanks, Chooch. Moving on. Or
yeah, move on. I'm good. Okay. I'm good. I'm good.
So I want to start. So we finished up.
One more thing.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay. Go. Is it important, or am I going to cut it out?
No. It's just something. It's like, okay. on the flip side, because I just thought about this, is you have that relationship, and then I'm just thinking of someone that is in and out, like in but out, mm-hmm. like not a consistent thing.
For sure.
And the like, I got a text last night from the one of the dads saying, "Hey, he's frustrated with a shot. Is there any chance we can get a one-on-one session because he's frustrated with a shot?" And of course, yeah, that's we can do that. But consistency. So we don't have to look at doing a private lesson because he's like a pretty good player. Consistency would avoid doing privates at this point. And number two, the listening skills. He shouldn't have to have extra because I've gone through things specifically with him on one-on-one levels. But it's like, so just the other day, I was doing a drill where it was just teaching kids how to get rid of pucks quickly. So let's say you're at the bumper spot on a power play or you're in a position to be one time, right? So a lot of kids, when they get pucks, it's the thought process is not necessary to shoot right away because they don't have that ingrained in that, you know, that circuit. So they got to play with the puck a little bit or they need perfect passes to let it go. So I was explaining, and it's a shot that a lot of people resist. It's just like surrounding the puck as you get it. So you can just take a quick clapper, like a half clapper. And went about four times with him the other day. I said, but do this. And no, he was doing his own thing. And I'm like, okay, well, you don't need a private lesson ever if you're that's the way you're going to respond to the actual teaching. But the consistency of it would make a big difference. And then, of course, listening. So the listening skills and the being a student is like a true student where you actually want to learn makes a big difference as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, guys. My name is David. For the last roughly year or so, I've been a member of the PowerTech podcast, and I've trusted Eric and Andy to help me as a hockey dad raising my kids and trying to figure out the answers. I don't have all the answers, and it's a great source of information, and it's an area where I feel comfortable leaning on to help me make better decisions. With that said, one thing I do know about is supplements. I find it's hard to navigate the whole supplement world and make sure that you're using products that work, that are effective, and again, are science research based. Blue Star Products, incredible brand. Their products are based on research, science, the products work, trademark patent ingredients, and you can find all of the research just by scanning QR codes that are right on the back of the product. Thank you to Eric and Andy for their podcast. I think it's amazing, and definitely give Blue Star Products a try.
Okay, so moving on, I'm going to start this episode with an email that I've received because I think it's really good and I think it would be some common questions that other parents might have. So I think it'd be good to talk about. So we finished up our coaching series. So now we're going to talk, this email is going to kind of lead into the topic talking about preparing to start the season off well or getting yourself mentally prepared to start off the season well. So this question was someone that we've had the pleasure of working with through the summer. So I'm gonna change it up just a little bit just for the sake of not sharing who the person is. But this is what they said. I'm going to read it directly from the email. So Coach Eric and Coach Andy, they start off just with a nice little thing about how they enjoy the podcast and it helps them and whatever. So that's awesome. We always appreciate that. So your latest podcast episode, number 149, hit quite a few nerves regarding our past experience with both the head coach and assistant coaches. What was disappointing to me is how much money plays a role in a team, no matter the ability of a player. That's not speculation. That's actual words out of the mouth of the coach. Without going into details with all of that, I was relieved to hear from our episode that I haven't been an overbearing hockey parent. Rather, I desired something that is absolutely achievable. Just as I would hope in a teacher, I simply want the coach to get to know my son a little. You mentioned exactly what I said last season. There's plenty of hours off the ice to spend a little time with them and make them feel like human beings. My son is by no means perfect, but like many, he can struggle with feeling intimidated. As the adults, I do ask coaches to take a bit of time just to talk to them because it can help with this. It truly goes a long way in their development. As a parent, this would be my primary encouragement to all coaches. Most kids work twice as hard when they know you have their back. So moving to my question, how would you suggest a player handles his nerves when it pertains to possibly playing old teammates that have a disposition to go after him in a game? That's number one. Number two, what are some of the best positions to stay safe, or how can you keep yourself safe? Do we say anything to the assistant coaches about this? And these are coaches that he feels safe with. And then obviously we're not trying to be dramatic, but this is something he continues to bring up. So the kid continues to bring this up. And she just said, again, thanks for all you do in the hockey community, making time for each of us. So first, any comments about, we'll start with any comments about the money playing a role in the team kind of thing. And then coaches kind of spending some time getting to know the kids. Just any comments about that first? And
yeah,
then we'll go to
the money thing is, it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Just unfortunate. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that there aren't people like that or people don't coach to make money anymore. That is a reality. It's just very unfortunate that that's priority number one. I've said it before. It's probably my biggest pet peeve in youth sports because you aren't necessarily professional coaches. I have no problem with a coach making like a little bit to cover their expenses in youth hockey. I have no problem if it's even to give them a little extra because it's some time. I have no problem with a little bit. What is a little bit though?
Right.
Yeah, you know, if I'm a billionaire, is $10,000 a lot or $20,000? Maybe it's not. I don't know. But like the point is that when people's motivation is to coach to make money, that's what bothers me in youth hockey because you're not a professional. Now, you might have a guy that played in the NHL or an actual real coach coaching youth hockey, but I'd like to keep it in perspective that it's still youth sports. You're not a professional coach because you're not getting fired necessarily. You just control things. I hate it. And I hate not anybody, but I hate the concept of if you are running a team and you do camps or if you have some other side business that you're taking the money from where you can manipulate and control. I can't stand it. I can't stand it at all because it takes away from just to me the integrity of it. And now there are teams where, because in Detroit, when I go coach there are these where, you know, the teams are more or less funded by a couple people that have the means to do it. And it's a beautiful thing, actually, if that person is just saying, I can do it, here's the team thing. But it's when they use the money and the money part to control the team, like you don't actually own the team. But because you're my coach and I give you X amount of dollars and my kid's on the team and you make sure you take care of my kid, I have zero tolerance for it. And I know most people would agree with me. And I also know that there's some people that are in that situation that listen to this and they go, yeah, okay, ass, don't talk like that. Or you'd do the same thing if you had the opportunity and all that stuff. And I wouldn't, by the way. So I understand where people, why they would do it, because it's free, like almost free money for people, but I can't stand that part in any way, shape, or form. I just wish that if people did the financial thing out of the goodness of their heart to help 15 kids or 16 kids to alleviate the pressure because they can, or it's a tax write-off or whatever it is, that's awesome. Like, it's a nice break for everybody. But it's almost like, you know, I take you out for lunch with the intentions of I get something back, right? No, I'm just buying you lunch, man. So that's what I think. I can't stand that. I can't stand it. But unfortunately, that's the way youth sports is going. And that side of the integrity seems to be going away.
Yeah.
So long answer?
No, it's fine. What about kind of the spending some time to get to know your players a little bit? Particularly with younger age groups.
Well,
right?
It's everything.
Yeah.
It's everything. It's like, that's why you should be coaching. Particularly at younger ages, it's not really the hockey. You know, like anytime, like today I made it because it was the last one for our younger group, like one of my younger groups, and I made it more fun. Like just not a whole lot of teaching, just kind of things that we did, and I just put it in a blender, and they had a whole bunch of reps, high pace and all that stuff, and they loved it because I'm not talking to them. And then I did like a small area game that I never do with these kids and they loved it. It's not about the hockey. It's about making, like I'm talking young, it's about having fun. So like this person said, it's like the kid just wants the coach. He wants approval by the coach, right? Any kid does. They want approval. And if you're the coach, you're a very influential person in their life. And if you don't give them the time of day, or if it's just about the hockey, then it's like, I think you blew it, man. You know, I think you blew it. So it's just not that hard either, like in my opinion. And I understand you can make the argument that it is about the hockey because I'm the coach and that's the way I want it to be. It's about the hockey and I don't want to be distracted by mom and dad and all that shit. Don't want to get too attached, but I mean, they're kids. They're kids and relationships are everything. Relationships. It's, you know, you have a chance to teach hockey, but you have a chance to affect their life or help them build confidence or whatever, have someone believe in them. So it's just, it's sad to me. That's all I can say. I guess more than anything, it's sad.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to the question part now because this is going to start to set the stage for talking about going into the season because everyone's season is starting in a week or two, whatever. So for this particular kid, how do you suggest a player handles his nerves when it comes to possibly playing old teammates that have the disposition to go after him in a game? So yep. Let's start with that one.
Yeah. 95% or 98% of all things that you fear never happen. And when they happen, it's usually not as bad as you think it's going to be. That's what I would first say. A lot of it is in your head. A lot of it is chirping. I'm not saying this isn't happening. I'm saying that this is probably a false evidence appearing real. Look at the freaking quotes today. No, but that's typically what it is. And so that goes back to, this is where moms and dads and coaches and players can be on the same page together. Like this should be, as I call it, psychology or mental toughness 101, right? It's always, this is like one of the best lessons anybody can take, not just for hockey, but for life, is when you start thinking about things that could happen or might happen, or, you know, you start thinking about the future too much, then your thought process could get out of hand. And what can they do is put you in the state of mind, just as this family is right now, saying, what if, what if, what if? Well, what if my aunt had a set of nuts on her? She'd be my uncle, right? You can, what if it to death? So number one is, my first thing is control what you can control. Be in the present. Don't worry about what could happen because it could and it might not. So if you spend your time focused on that, that's the, you know, they're going to be out to get you. First of all, I know this boy, and if you can catch him, good luck, by the way. That's number one. Kid can wheel. He's a very good hockey player. So that's number one. So I don't want to say his name, but you're better than probably most of these guys anyway, so I wouldn't worry about it. But the main thing is to focus on what you can control on and worrying about or getting anxiety, because that's basically what it is, over what may happen because of what a couple kids said is I can promise you it's a waste of your time.
Yeah.
It really is. It's go out and just go play the game.
Yeah, and I think for this particular kid, just because I know the kid, nice kid, reminds me of myself when I was a kid. Just nice kid, smiley kid, likes playing. If you can, as the parents, if you can start to instill a little bit of that grittiness where not in the sense of like going and taking a whack at them or something, but just like not backing down, even though you're scared, it's just a good exercise to do. Because I mean, as the parents too, like, you know, like nothing's really going to happen. Like they're 11 and 12. Like, what are they going
to
do? Right?
And to boot, there's not a lot of box, but there is no body right. checking. So there's physically nothing really could happen.
Right. So what are they going to do yeah. really? Right. Yeah. So for, as the parents, that's something where you can use it as a teaching moment to maybe what I would say to an older kid, maybe it's a bit much for this kid, but you can try to sharpen me up here. As Steve Ott says, most people bluff. And like start learning to call some bluffs, even though he's whatever age he is, younger. I think that could be a good exercise to try to start doing, because you're going to have to do it later anyways. So especially if the kid he's a little bit on the side of feeling nervous or feeling scared about things, starting to get him to face that now is just good practice before it becomes a really like deeply ingrained habit as he's older, when the game actually is tough, because right now he's too young for the game to be tough. So from his perspective, obviously it seems like it's tough and it's scary and all that, but
yeah, it's a new experience, right?
As the parents, you're watching it knowing like these kids are young, like there's not a whole lot they can actually do, so it'd be a good practice for him to start to deal with that, you know. So guys, bluff, man. So I don't know, is that too much to say to
no,
a younger kid?
No, but you said it in a different way than I was going to say. Is like, it's a really good thing to understand. Is like, what you need, like, said it to my son, I say it to anybody that I train, is talk is cheap. And guess what? Most people love to talk, but most people don't back their stuff up anyways. So I always like to say, go about your business and do it very quietly and let your actions do the speaking. Because we talk about it, how many games you go to in the OHL where guys are the toughest guys with their mouth.
Just yap.
But they will not do one thing. There's a very small percentage of guys that actually will do anything. So I'm always a big believer of keep the pie hole shut. And then if you do want to take a run at me, my stick will be across your head or it'll be across your arms and you won't want to do it again because I'm not backing down. So as you said, number one, this is the dichotomy of being a competitive athlete, especially in a physical sport, is that we raise our kids to be nice and polite. And, you know, depending on parenting sometimes, like my wife, for example, Charlie and I will be talking about something and she'll be like, okay, but you're going to be nice to these people, right? And it's like, so I get defensive. I go, it doesn't have to be nice all the time or sportsmanlike all the time. Sometimes he needs to go and chop someone's ankles. Don't worry about it. Or if someone rubs them the wrong way off the on the streets or whatever, the streets, like the streets. We're from downtown Detroit, right? No, but like if outside of the hockey rinks, sometimes you have to stand up for yourself and it might be abrasive and I apologize. So what? So like there's that dichotomy is you want to raise a nice person that you can take out in public that people like and respect. But you know what? Sometimes, oh well. And it's hard to do because we want our kids to be good people.
But you should always be capable of that. You should have that ability to stand up for yourself and like kick some ass if you have to. And that doesn't mean you're going to beat somebody up or get beat up or put yourself in a bad position because you're being stupid. Like that's not what that means. But like just sometimes it's called for. Sometimes there's like aggression and even violence is called for in whatever the situation is that you're in because you need to protect yourself, you know? And if you can't do that because you're just harmless, like that's no good.
No. You know, you want to have talking's not the way though. So we've seen this in so many games where guys yap and yap and yap and they tell them, we heard the words, I am going to kill you. I am going to kick your ass. But you could have and you didn't, but you like to talk. So it's like most guys won't do anything. It's a very small percentage of people that are even willing to. So the advice for a parent and the kid is, number one, stay in the moment, stay present, just do what you can do. Don't control, don't think too much in the future because it's probably not going to happen anyways. You're not playing the game at a physical level yet. So like, let's think about that, go through that. It's not, nothing's going to happen. There's refs. It's actually a safe sport for the most part. And then just go play your game. And then, as you said, have some bites so that all the guys that are yapping, if they do physically try to not harm you, but get in your grill, give it to them. And these are not like, some guys don't have that in them right away, but learn the little baby steps. It's like, take the low hanging fruit as a player. It's not going put someone in the hospital, but it's like, if someone gets in your grill, like it's the little things of having your stick ready all the time so that when someone does come at you, you're protecting yourself. And maybe look at it that way. You're protecting yourself. And people will respect, you can chirp all day, but people respect the people that have action, or I'm not going to say action, but at least don't back down. And it's something to learn. And it's a process. It's just a process.
And that's a good way to put it too. It's not about, because I'm not, like I said, you know, there's time and a place where that stuff has to happen, but I'm not saying you have to go from zero to you get in a fist fight tomorrow. Right. But it could just be your first step is just standing, not skating away. You know, you didn't do anything, but you stood there and the kid was yapping and you stood there and you didn't show like that you're weak where they can come do it again because they know it's a free pass. It's like nobody gets a free lunch around you. That's a good thing to try to, that's a good quality to try to have just as an athlete. Like there's no free lunch when people are around you. That doesn't mean you have to be the toughest guy ever, but it's just, they know
showing up is half the battle.
Just showing up.
It's more than half the battle.
Just showing up. I want to tell that story about, because we were talking about fights this morning. And I remember my first one. I think I might've mentioned this story before on the podcast, but I was 15 when I got my first hockey fight. And I had never been in a real fight before that, other than like boxing training stuff, which is not a real fight. And I remember the kid that I fought was supposed to be like a tough guy at my junior camp, right? You know, and he was chirping our bench during the red and white game or whatever it was. And I was kind of looking for somebody else to like go and do something to this kid. And I'm just like, no one's doing anything. So I'm like looking down the bench, like at the older kids, because I was 15 at my first junior camp, right? And this kid was older. And I'm waiting for somebody to go to do say something even. Nobody, nothing. So for whatever reason, I started yapping him back. And then next thing I know, I'm fighting the guy on the ice. And I did fine. I did fine. He definitely won the fight. I got my first black eye, which I thought was cool. But I was like, that's the tough guy? Yeah. I'm like, this is the guy that everybody's scared of? I'm like, that was fine.
So go back to the original statement.
Yeah.
98% of the things you think are going to happen don't. And when they do, they're not as bad as they...
Right.
They're never as bad as you thought it would be.
Yeah. And it's just that willingness to stand in there. Like, that's what I realized that day. Like, after that fight, I was like, just be in there. You'll beat 90% of the guys just standing in there, you know? And if we bring that down to a lesser scale, it doesn't have to be a fight, but it's just... like, say something for yourself. You know, you got something to say, say it. Stand in there. You know, give the guy a little shot. And you might get one back, and it might hurt. And it is what it is. But you'll be okay. Like, you know that you're going to be okay.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, people make it, like, even just with hitting in hockey, a lot of people instill fear in their kids because they make it bigger than what it actually is. It's just a hit. It's not a big deal. So anyways, the other thing I was going to say about that is like the talking part is talk is so cheap. And isn't it something like when you watch, for me, I always back off and I go like, this can bite you, man. It's going to eventually is when you, I love UFC. I love it so much. For various reasons, but what I don't understand, and I understand the entertainment purpose of it, but when people chirp on how they're gonna knock someone out, like Conor McGregor, for example, every fight he's gonna predict the knockout, blah blah blah. But when you get your ass handed to you in that fight, talk meant nothing. It meant nothing. Like, that's what I loved George St. Pierre as a fighter. His guys would just try to just get him, and he would sit there professional and just he said, I'm not a good chirper anyways. Yeah. But the bottom line was if you're going to knock me out, you'll knock me out. But I'm not going to say a word because it's just embarrassing.
Yeah. Well, so, I think Khabib was like that too. He didn't say a whole lot. And he would just ground and pound you. Like,
he'd just say, I'll just smash you.
Yeah, I'll just smash your face. Yeah. No
three
problem.
Words. Yeah. I will smash you. Yeah. Three words. Four letters. Four.
right?
Yeah.
So that's great. I think, I don't know if that is necessarily what you thought you were going to get in terms of advice on this, but hopefully that's something useful.
I think it's honest though.
It is honest.
Because
that's the honest advice.
The thing is that I would never want to be less than honest about something like that because we're dealing with a kid. And because we've all been there, I don't care who you are, unless you're not human, you've been in situations where you had fear. And it's a matter of understanding where fear, and George St. Pierre's book talks about this a lot, but did you understand where fear comes from? That's number one. Like, so you can learn this at an early age, right? That's why parenting and coaching is very helpful in these situations, is to explain stuff like we did. If the kid hears this 50 times over the next 2 years, they're probably going to be able to deal with things a little bit better. But anyways, fear comes from mostly your imagination, right? Yeah. And then learning how to not run from fear, but addressing it, and you just become, you can just do baby steps. It's huge. It's just the honest way to do it. Because if we just say fear, don't worry about it, that's not an answer, right?
Yeah. So then maybe we'll just do these quick because we've been yapping here. But
it's okay.
The last parts of it was best positions to stay safe. We kind of talked about that. Make sure your stick's ready.
Is that saying staying safe on the ice?
Yeah, I would think on the ice.
Well,
I'm assuming.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to answer that for that family right now. Yeah. Is like, because I know the kid. He's too good of a hockey player to worry about any of that. He plays with his head up. He's fine. Yeah. I'm not even worried. Like, I'm being honest with.
There's no hitting.
That, and even if there was, I have zero worries about this boy.
Yeah,
because he's good. He's elusive. He's quick. He's smart, and he's going to be so fine. So fine. I'm not worried about that at all.
And then last part, do we say anything to the assistant coaches about it, whom he feels safe with? So, like, maybe it sounds like he has some kind of relationship with assistant coaches there. Yeah, something. So, is that something you mention as the parents if the kid's, like, worried about it? Or
yeah, well, here's a good way to test what your coaches are all about. It's an issue. It's an issue. I would love it if I knew, because, okay, let's just say they're playing against, they're red and they're playing against the blue team. That's all I got today, right? So, no, so they're playing against this team and he doesn't have a great game. His former team doesn't have a good game. And the coach is like, what's wrong with you today, man? Like, you're better than that. And you see that 2-3 times. It's like, and maybe that spills into three other games in a row or something like that. And then all the coaches wonder, like, maybe he doesn't have
it. Yeah, that's a good point.
So
yeah.
As a parent, especially if you trust someone, hey, Eric, just can I pull you aside for a second? Yeah. Listen, Junior has obviously played on this team before. He's a little bit nervous, whatever. Can you just what we said to him is like probably things are going to happen, address whatever it is. And do you have a little talk for him? Or if you see anything off, can you just maybe talk to him? It's just a bullet for the gun.
Yeah, for sure.
Right?
I would agree. That's a good point. I didn't even really think of it that way. Yeah. But yeah, you don't want
and
to.
Then
be...
And then at the end of the day, you find out if the coach goes, looks at you like whatever, or doesn't talk to the kid at all because he doesn't care. Then it's like, okay, I see where you're from.
Right. Yeah. Right? That's good. Because I didn't think of that like leaking into other games, because that can happen, right? Where it's 100%. Like you're in your own head. Coach says, coach knocks you down another peg and you're already a little bit down about this. Like,
it's important. It's that. And it's like it's a, I'm just reading this book from, Bob Rotella. He's a sports psychologist, and it's funny how life goes. It just intermingles, right? But it's like your confidence is a very fragile thing, especially when you're young, especially if you don't know what confidence is and where it comes from and how you have it. And like, confidence should never be broken by external stimulation. Confidence is here, right? It shouldn't matter who, what, when, where. Easy to say, hard to do. So if you see what it is if that leaks out and he loses confidence one game and it happened and maybe he doesn't feel good about himself, right? Because now it's a confidence thing.
See you, Nico.
So if confidence leaks out all of a sudden, it's like you don't even know where that confidence, how it leaked out or whatever. And then now with the advent of social media, maybe those kids text someone else or they social media this and say, he was a wussy, and all of a sudden he sees that. Whatever. I'm just throwing shit out there. There's all these different external things. So like what you're always trying to do is build confidence with your kid and surround your son and your family with like a body of armor all the time. I'm not saying protection. I'm saying the confidence to deal with life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
100%, man. Yeah. That's great advice. Okay. So now that we've talked for 4 hours, we'll go through, it actually tees it up really well, to be honest with you, getting into how to have a good start. Because the thing about having a new season is it's a fresh start, and it can go good or bad real quick. And for yourself, for your coach, as the parents, things can either stay high or they can start to drop down. So I wanted to kind of talk about this because in the next couple of weeks, everyone's kind of starting, tournaments are starting, teams are starting to play. So I kind of want to walk through just some things. It's going to be a little bit all over the place in terms of because there's a lot to talk about in terms of setting up, because there's so many different things to touch on. So I want to touch on a bunch of different things, and then maybe we could isolate one and talk a little bit more about one later on. So this is going to be kind of like a more overview surface level thing about getting into a good start off the hop here. And this kind of could go for any level. So first, any opening thoughts first before I get into some like specific questions that we can go? Just about having a good start that you think?
Just shoot.
Ready to go?
Okay. Shoot, Sheriff.
So I want to talk a little bit about from the player perspective a little bit. And the player perspective will kind of tie with the parent perspective because most of the parents are who's listening. And then we'll talk a little bit from a coach perspective as well. So for the first thing, kind of along the same lines as we're talking about the mental side of it, is as players, how do you mentally prepare yourself to have a good start? So this could be like habits and rituals, things like that going into the season, or your dynamics with your team, or whatever. So opening thoughts on that from the player side.
Yeah, well, okay. So when you to start off well, it shouldn't start in September, October when the season starts. Your should start long before that. And I think that's a reasonable thing that maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but I think it's a reasonable thing to expect from everybody that when last season is over and you go into the 4 months of summer training or summer vacation, whatever it is that you do, that as you're going into your next season, that you should have some preparation done. I'm assuming that, and that's really where it comes from. And then within that, you should have some team goals, which are sometimes out of your control, but personal goals. And I'm not talking goals, not scoring goals. That's not what it is. I mean, it is one thing, but it's the things that get you the goals that are more important. So, I think everyone should and I didn't say would, because most people don't take the time to exercise this part of life, but most people should visualize a little bit to see themselves in a successful situation and to doing the things that they do well. That's something that someone should have done. But if you haven't already, you should start doing that 10, 15 minutes a day. You should really be watching yourself play a great game of hockey. And if something goes wrong in your vision, you know, correct that in your mind, because your brain doesn't know the difference between reality and fake. Doesn't. So if you see yourself doing good things, that's good. Now to get off a hot start, a lot of times it's a decision. So I just was with a group today that were 15, 16, no, 16, 17 year olds. And they're a quieter group. It's just, and this, I think this is a more common than, from what I've seen, I think it's becoming a more common thing. And I actually said that to them. I said, I don't know if it's a COVID thing. It might be, might not be, but I think people have just, kids or whatever, for whatever reason, maybe it's the social media as well. Kids don't speak as much and they're not as vocal. So I said, one of the things you can do, and this is what I mean, like you can control some of it, is you can decide the pace. That's one thing you can do. So I was telling them, like, from a leadership point of view, I said, if you're not a talker, if you don't like to speak and chirp on the ice, like do with your teammates, I'm open, stuff like that. The one thing you can control is pace. So starting your season, it's the one thing you can control is pace. You don't have to speak. You don't have to let everybody know that you're working hard. But it's the one thing you can dictate. On a bad team, a good team, if your pace is high, your coach will never say a thing to you. So that's one thing you can do, is understand that, yeah, I'm going to have a pace, and that pace starts with a decision, right? So you decide that you're going to have a good start, and then from there, from your personal goals, is identify, once again, we do this probably 16 times an episode, is identify as best as you can what are your primary things that make you a good hockey player that can say, I had a good game. Scoring a goal does not make you a good hockey player, right? So what are those things? So if you're like a power forward, I like to use that because Buckshot over there is a power forward, but like if you don't go to the paint and go to the net in the offensive zone and you complain about not getting points, that's one of your reasons. If you don't finish your hits, that's one of your reasons. If you don't have good defensive awareness, get clean exits and entries, right? If you don't have pace in the neutral, anyways, if you don't shoot the puck ever, you can't score. So anyways, it's those habits, those four or five habits or three habits that you need to identify. I do this, this, and this. I can probably ensure that I have a good game. If I back check hard or anything. So number one is the decision. Number two, it's the pace. Number three is have those three, four things that you I know what they are and then do them every day.
Yep.
That will start your season off well.
Yeah. A couple things. One would be, you talked about preparation kind of before the season starts. So you should have been doing something. I just want to point out, because we talk a lot about, especially the younger you go, the more it's like get away from hockey a bit in the summertime. But like if you love to play and you want to, assuming we're talking to kids that want to move on in hockey, like it's always there. Like there's always a little bit of focus on hockey, right? So even though you're playing baseball or you're in another sport or you're on vacation or whatever, there should be something there about hockey. Otherwise you just don't love hockey and that's fine. But like if you love it, we're assuming that's who we're talking to. So that's number one. And then number two, you talked about visualizing. Another thing I would add on to that is, even for young kids, actually writing down your goals or your whatever, 3, 4, 5 things, or what you want out of the season, or like what you think you can accomplish with your team, and actually having it written, because then you can go back to it. Because if you just think about it, it's easy to lose. It's easy to lose that, forget, you can't come back to it. But if you have a book, like, it's funny, because I remember being young, like having a journal was like a not cool thing. If you had a journal, it was like, do you get made fun of? Because actually you'd call it a diary. You have a diary, and that was like not cool. But I have one. Call it a journal, call it a notebook, call it, Charlie's raising his hand, Charlie has one, right? You have one. So call it whatever you want to call it. Something where you can keep track of your thoughts a little bit and what's going on in your life, and tracking, a method of tracking what's happening. Even when you're young, it can be very, very useful. You know, it doesn't just have to be the stereotype of a 12-year-old grade school girl with the pony diary. Like, that's not what it has to be. It's just a good thing to be able to do. It's a good exercise. So aside from just the visualizing part, which I think is great, also actually writing down your stuff, because then you can go back to it. Or even as parents, like, you can go back to it, you know, and you've actually talked about some of this stuff.
Yeah. Well, this, now you got me going.
Yeah.
No, because it's like, I'm talking about the mental side of things, is I don't really think people put time into it. Look at that. So as you said, or as we said earlier, is visualize. Why? You see yourself doing something well, man, over and over and over again, right? So I was just, again, reading the book. I think it was William James, I could be wrong. As a man thinketh, so is he. Okay? So if you don't visualize and you don't write down your, I am tough. Like, so let's say you're scared. You change your narrative. I am not scared. Or don't say that. Say, I am tough. I go to dirty areas. I shoot pucks. I score goals. Whatever. I do this. And if you, because what people do, and it's a challenge not to, is to talk about yourself in a negative way. It's so easy for me over the last few weeks to say, I am just exhausted.
Oh, me too, man.
As a man thinketh, so is he.
Yeah.
Guess what I was? Exhausted. And in my head, I had to say, but this is what you do. And I had to talk myself out of it, because the default is to beat the shit out of yourself, right? When you miss a net, you could score, you could shoot 5 pucks and say, I'm going to hit the crossbar 5 times, like in practice. Or no, let's say in practice, you're trying to score goals. You could hit 5, or you score 5, miss 1, you go, I can't score. My shot sucks. That's where we go. So it's actually not a joke. It's actually, the younger you do this, the more you do this, the more beneficial it is. Because as a man thinketh, so is he. So instead of, you know, there's tactics to do this, right? Like when you don't do something well, instead of beating yourself up, you can say, I'm going to get that one back. That puts you in a positive frame. I'm not a psychologist, but I'm just saying this is the truth. So it's important that you would see yourself as what you want to be, because you know what the crazy thing is? It doesn't happen in a month, but it does happen. You become that person because you see yourself every day as a, if you're a goal scorer, scoring goals, if you see yourself scoring 50 goals a day, then you're probably going to have a better success rate on the ice. Not probably, you will, right? If you see yourself, if you're a little nervous and you tell yourself, no, I am going to go and I am going to get my first hockey fight. I am doing it. I fight, I hit, I blah, 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 blah. And then when it happens, it's not a shock, right? You've seen it, you've talked about it, you hear it, and it's building yourself up, because honestly, guys, there's not a lot of people that are going to do it for you, right?
That's for sure.
Seriously.
And it's not about lying to yourself either.
You're not
like
lying.
The scared...
It's what you see yourself at.
Yeah, but the scared thing in particular, because that's a common problem in a certain area, like someone's scared of something no matter what, and you don't have to say like, well, I'm not actually scared. It's like, okay, you are scared though, right? But instead it could be like I'm scared, but I'm brave, or like, I'm scared, but I'm going to do it anyways, or I'm scared. And you make the goals actually real, where you're not ignoring or pretending like that something isn't happening, that's happening, because you can set goals that are real, or you can think of things in a real way, as opposed to thinking of things in la la land, right? Because a lot of people do that too, right? They'll be in la la land with what they think, and then it never becomes a reality because they don't do action steps, because the goals they made in the first place weren't even realistic.
Yeah.
You know, so that's
or
another
they're not
caveat to
hanging
that.
Fruit.
Like, yeah, exactly. It's too complicated, or too much, or too far advanced, or whatever, right? So I think that's important. So I think that's good from the player side. For the coaches, then, getting off to a good start as a coach. So if we talk about what are the most important things to focus on initially with your team as a coach. So this could be even just getting their mindset right, getting your team philosophy set up properly, actual skills and drills that you're doing, like something along those lines for the coaches. How do they get off to like a good start or off on a good foot with the team?
Well, it's really no different than an individual player, right? You should be, if your season starts September 1st and you're starting to think about what your team's all about on October, what's before September, August, turnip truck. If you're thinking of it at the last day of August, then you probably didn't prepare yourself. So you have to think, what is the identity of my team? What do I want it to be? What are the values that I have on the team? Are we going to be, again, hard forechecking team? Or are we going to be passive because we're not talented or whatever? So anyways, you do those three, four things for your team. It's like a self-identity. You're just a bigger identity, right? You're just a bigger self. And the values and stuff like that. And you start with that. And then your practices emulate your, what's the word?
Philosophy.
Philosophy. And that's what you work on.
So then from
continuing. And it's not about necessarily winning or losing.
Right.
It can be. But it's about doing the process right, right? Like we always got to remember that. It's about you can win games or you can score goals or whatever success thing that you talk about. You can get it done. But if it's not done properly, is that good? Right? So it's always about doing things the way that it's supposed to be done for your team or whatever, not cheating a system or whatever. So if the process is done properly, do the outcomes really matter?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, because the results, I mean, the results will come, though.
Right, that's, but it might matter to mom and dad sitting there, or, you know, in the OHL, like, trade me right now because this coach doesn't know what he's doing and all that stuff, but there's a process. And sometimes you got to just wait to see the process. Interestingly enough, like, if I look at the OHL, it seems to be, since Charlie's been in the league for 2 years, that the London Knights don't necessarily get off to their best starts. I've seen it for 2 years, and maybe it happens more often than not. So is it panic mode? Seems every year they're in the finals or close to it. They're an unreal organization. So I think that's a really good example of the process taking care of itself, right? You don't get to play Eric on this power play, or you might even miss a shift. You're a first-round pick, but you don't get to play until it's done properly. You don't get to play, man. In fact, you might be watching, eating popcorn, or you might park your ass on the bench. It's not being an asshole. I think it's like the way it has to be for us to succeed. And they've got a huge success rate, right? So that's a great example of don't panic, because, like, for parents, don't panic and don't freak out when things aren't going well, because maybe the process is close. Maybe it's not even close. But would you rather have, at the end of the day, okay, I'll say from a parent, a coach, or a player's point of view, it's all the same. Would you rather win today or win the season this year and not play the right way and do things the right way, and then have to start the next season off and learn the right way again? Like, I'd rather take my lumps doing it the right way and losing rather than winning just because.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's the way you get long-term success, right? Because you can cheat it in the short term, but over time. Yeah.
So I think that's why especially in youth hockey, and I would say OHL too, like NHL, there's a process, but if you're fired if you don't win, but unless there's an understanding that there's a year or two of development. But I would just say in youth hockey, I think that needs, I'm not saying don't win, but I'm saying the process is more important than the wins and losses.
Yeah, for sure. Especially younger. The younger you are, the more that's true. So then if we stay on that thread, like you talk about the London Knights as an organization, how do you think, or what do you think about like the concept of building like team chemistry? Because I think this is a kind of interesting point to make, because this isn't something we've really talked about much. How do you make, like, as a coach, how do you make sure that your team is gelling? Like, that's a commonly used term.
Had a text the other day when one of our comments saying that I got a kid on my team that he's actually pretty good, but he does not listen. He's disruptive and he's basically a pain in the ass and a nightmare. Is that what he used? Yeah. He said, what would you do? And I said, get off my team. Yeah. I don't want it. Because that, if you ever want chemistry, that with that guy there, there will not be any. I'll take someone that could replace this kid. No problem. Chemistry is, I mean, it comes down to your philosophy. Again, if you're a coach that just hopes there's chemistry, then there probably won't be because you're so loosey-goosey or aloof. Is that a word? Yeah. So it does come from the top down. And if you have good, like that's why I love Guelph Storm so much. I mean, George is old school, but he has principles and expectations. And, you know, and a lot of times people will say, well, it's a little much, man. But is it though? Is it? You know, because there's, and then the kids sort it out, but it's like it comes from the top down. I really believe that.
Okay, but then what about, so let's say top down, coach is doing a good job from the player side, and then because of that, maybe from the parent side, because the kid, if when the kids are younger especially, I find there's, it always stems from the top, so I'm not saying that that's not true. That's definitely true, because teams that have a lot of conflict, normally the coach is a goof or like an idiot or something like that. So normally when there's a good coach, the team gets along pretty well. But putting that aside, from the player perspective, how to even with Charlie, like there's a natural bond that happens with teammates where like everyone's kind of buddies. There can be like little pocket cliques and whatever if you have a more dysfunctional team. But what do you think about from the team perspective, away from the rink, off the ice, trying to develop team chemistry that way? So that would be like making sure you're hanging out with guys on the team and that kind of stuff.
I'm not sold that has to happen. You know, it's better if it does. But like, okay, let's say we live in Toronto, we're playing for the Toronto Marlies. How can we hang out? You might live an hour and a half away. We probably don't go to the same school. So it's like, that's a very tough thing to do. So I think it's important to be, while you're together, have good chemistry and do things together, and teaching the principles. Like, the goal scorer is not make him the best person. And the guy that gets 1 point and is contributing to the team is not a less person, or they're not less important to the team or anything. So the chemistry has to be teaching everybody, even though it's a hard concept to understand, that everyone has a role and it's important, right? The leadership about making sure that we're accepting like everybody on your team for what they are, like everyone's got something. But that again, it's a coach thing. It comes down from the top down. So you can always organize as a team things that you can do as a team so that you get to know each other, like, you know, events. Like, I'm trying to think of something, and I should have about 1,000, but just things where, you know, it might be a pickleball freaking tournament,
yeah,
man,
yeah, yeah.
Where you're mixing up not best friends.
Yeah, the team builder type stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think that's all I can think of right now.
Well, I want to make that point the same as you, because I kind of was thinking the same thing. Like, I'm not convinced either that those things have to happen, because like when you're at hockey practice, when you're doing that stuff, you are hanging out, you know, and that's the thing about a team sport. It is very social by nature anyways. So it's like, do you need to add more on top of that? Like, maybe you do, maybe you don't, maybe some is good, maybe some isn't. But I've played on teams where we've done the team builders and nobody likes each other. And I've been on teams where all we did was practice and did bus trips and that, and we were super tight. You know, I mean, it's easier when you're in junior because you're together so much. But
one thing that is, it's kind of sounds soft, but I like this. I did an exercise with this with a group of people one time, and it was about I got to say something about you that I see in you. So smart. Not the handsomest guy, you know, a couple of things where other people go, okay. So it's number one, makes you vulnerable. And number two, it's like, maybe you didn't see in yourself what I saw in you. And then like you do that 16 times. It's like, it's something.
That's a good exercise. I like that a lot.
I had to use a crayon when I did mine.
A crayon?
Yeah.
Come on. That's so funny. Yeah, the team chemistry thing is interesting to me, because, I mean, we go back to that segment we talked about, the team builder stuff. And like I said, I'm not convinced that that's necessary, because the hockey time is hangout time, you know? So, I mean, when you're younger, it's because, you know, moms want to throw the kid a birthday party and invite the team and all this, because I remember that kind of stuff happening when I was a kid, and that's all fine. But I don't know how serious it needs to be.
Yeah, and the other side is, like, sometimes it's out of your control. because like from the NHL, OHL level, there's a certain amount of control that you can have because you can draft and invite and sign players that you do your homework and they have good character. If you sign someone that doesn't have good character and you just sign them for the hockey talent, that's on you. And that's sometimes that happens, right? You're just such a good hockey player. Who cares? But if you want the culture and you want the room to be good and team chemistry, then finding people with high character is priority number one. Good hockey players with high character. Who wouldn't want that, right? Yeah. Now, when you're coaching youth hockey, maybe you're limited to that or the research. Yeah. You know, you can't go do background checks on everybody for 3 hours to make sure that they're good people. And if they're 11, how bad they can be. But you'll find out, I guess. But the goal is, if you want good chemistry, the best thing is to find good people. Because people can have a little bit of tolerance and stuff.
I want to skip ahead one to talk about fitness and nutrition stuff, because this is what I like to talk about. So I think everybody kind of knows roughly that fitness nutrition stuff is important. For the younger you go, the less, the older, the more important it is. But at any age, I think it's important that you start to set up just good routines in general. And I think that is probably, to me, that would probably be my biggest thing to share, to have like a good start and then to maintain your performance through the season, is having solid routines, whether it's a pregame routine, a weekly routine, a daily routine, a morning routine, whatever routine you want to call it. And that's with your like fitness, with your food, with your sleep, hydration, like all of those things. I think that that's one of the most important things that you should be doing to set yourself up for success. Now, the younger you are, it's more on the parents to do that, because you kind of have to enforce the routines. And again, it's like, how serious do we need to be when they're young? But it's just a good idea to keep yourself in a good rhythm. So from the player perspective, I think it's really important that you're going to bed at the right times, you know, making sure that you're getting recovery, especially when you're older, but making sure that you're getting to bed at a decent time. And that doesn't mean go to bed at 8:30. It means go to bed in coordination with how you would play hockey. So for the easiest example is for kids that are in junior, because they always play at like 7 or whatever. So if you go to bed at 8:30 every night, like that's not actually better, because at 7 you're going to start to be tired. So it's like 11 o'clock is like a good bedtime, you know, and trying to keep it consistent, you know, trying to eat on the same schedule every day, eat at the same times, try to have a good like base of your diet. And for parents, like this is where you can make a huge difference by just paying attention a little bit to this stuff, because you can start to instill good habits. So that when your kid is 15, 16, 17, and it actually starts to become more serious, they already have like a little bit of a base. And that was one thing for my parents. Like, they were never like super into nutrition or fitness or anything, but they had awareness about food and like, no, you're not eating that at this time. Like, no, you're not eating too much of that. Make sure you finish eating this. Make sure you have enough of this. And they were trying to make sure I had like balance in the way I was eating. Because I see so many kids, like even the kids through the summer, they come here with their lunch for the day. And I'm just like, what is that? What, like, this is what your parents gave you to eat today, you know? And some of them, it's not even their fault. They just don't know, right?
No.
100%. Because eating healthy is not like way more expensive. You know what I mean? So like, there's not really an excuse for buying the junk versus buying something else. You know, you can do pretty well on the same budget in terms of healthy food. So I think it's important that you start trying to set up routines in all of those avenues, whether it's a sleep thing or a fitness thing or a nutrition thing. That's probably the thing that'll maintain you through the season to make sure that you're performing well. Because if you don't do that, you could start off even okay, but then over time it just beats you down. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, it's you see it, right? Like yeah. The season isn't going to be kind to you. If you're playing lots of hockey, you're not staying in shape. You're actually getting broken down. So that's why it's important that you feed yourself properly, the best that you can. Drinking lots of water and stuff. And then from a fitness standpoint, it's like you lose it, right? You lose it. Like for me, it's been 6.5 weeks. I've only worked out because it's just physically not, it's possible. I'm not going to say it's impossible, but the challenge of lifting the weights for the last 7 weeks, it's just like very, 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 very extremely difficult. Probably not beneficial either to a certain degree. So I've noticed in the last 6 weeks, I've lifted a little bit, but my body is I'm turning into a freaking milk bag right now, right? Because that's what happens, right? It's not as tight right now. It's like, I don't want to beat the living shit out of myself.
You're doing fine.
No, I'm not. It's not good. But I don't like the way I look or feel, but that's 6 weeks or 5 weeks, whatever. And the season starts, that's what happens. You start beating yourself up. It's actually important that you continue. I'm not saying go to a gym and crank it out for an hour and a half, but what I'm saying is touch your squats, touch your RFEs, touch your presses and your back exercises, bands and all that stuff to keep yourself the muscle stimulated and not totally lose things, right?
Yeah. So what, as a parent, I want to talk a little bit about this for the younger kids because it can be tough if you don't know.
Yeah.
And like you were fortunate enough because you knew some. So let's say when Charlie was young and you're doing the AAA travel schedule, how did you, or did you think about it a lot, or did you kind of just let it ride with whatever was going on? Or like, what are some tips you would give parents to try to kind of do what I'm saying is like keep a routine or make sure they're eating well and those types of things? Like, yeah. How, what was it like
ours,
for you?
Ours was like basic.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't going to argue with my kid at 12 years old because he didn't do push-ups or he had a chocolate bar or something like that. But having said that, he was never a late guy because we went to bed early. So his eating habits were always good. He always drank water. And then his intuitively, he just knew that I have to drink water. And he put himself into a somewhat of a routine where he, nothing crazy, but he knew that when he went to the rink, he should chug a water or a Gatorade. And on game days and stuff, he would do things the right way. And he did good stretches every game. And he took that part seriously. So from even before you're drafted, the stuff that he did, I was happy with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it wasn't crazy because it doesn't have to be crazy.
Okay, so this is what I wanted you to say.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Oh, okay.
Because
you go nuts.
This is what I'm saying.
You want to get in a fight with your kid, tell him to do something.
Well, yeah, and this is what I'm saying, right? So it's like, okay, how serious does it need to be when they're 12? So what you did is establish some good basic principles. And then if there's deviation, like, it's okay, man. Like, it doesn't have to be that serious. Because I've seen that too, where parents are like so, and it's like, you want your kid to hate their life? Or you want them to hate you? It's like, that's a recipe for disaster. Yeah. You can never have a chocolate bar. The kid wants to have a chocolate bar, man.
It's not going to kill him.
Yeah, it's fine.
When he eats a piece of lasagna the size of his head before a game, and he comes out and goes, oh, I didn't feel good. He puts two and two together.
Right. Exactly. So that's what I want to point out on that, because a lot of times when we talk, me in particular, because I'm super into this stuff, I don't want it to sound like you have to be a Bible thumper about your fitness and nutrition. It's like, that's not what I'm saying. But awareness, you know, have some, because then it just makes it easier for the kid when they're older. And like, most parents want to set their kid up for success. So it just makes it easier when
they're
older.
You get a kid drinking a couple extra glasses of water a day or on game days instead of not, that's a win, right? If a kid can actually say, before a game, I like to have, if I can, I'd like to have fish and rice and broccoli, if they can make a decision, even some of the times, it's a win. You're getting there.
Right. So last thing, we could wrap up on this one. So we talked at the beginning a little bit about like goal setting and that kind of stuff to set yourself up well. And then I want to talk a little bit about like managing the pregame nerves, kind of like we talked about the one player who's nervous about going against other players. So I want to touch that one more time. And then maybe from the coach's perspective, like the role of motivation, like the role of motivating players and getting them up for games to start more than just to start the season off, but to start the season off a little bit at least. So maybe you can take it from like the coaching side of it. How do you like kind of help players like settle down if they're nervous before games, number one? And then what's the role of trying to be a motivator as a coach? Things like that. Does that make sense? Is that enough?
So, no, it's good. So let's just start with kids' nerves. So I played with a kid when I was I couldn't understand it. Before games, he used to puke every game. So this kid had some anxiety. Not a bad player either. But every game, and it'd be like, I'd look at him, go, okay, can you stop? It's like, it's okay. We'd be in championship games. It would be also like our normal game on a Tuesday in the middle of November. It's like, what are you puking for? But it got up. So, and I don't know if anyone ever addressed it or talked to him, but he should have. Right. So to me, the biggest thing a coach could do is like, it goes back to how we started this podcast. This is why it's really good to have a village of people on the same page, understanding the same thing. if you see people that are nervous and freaking out or changing their whole routine, because you've seen this in a championship game, guys are taping their sticks different. They're going to do a real warm-up today because this is a big game. What they've already decided is that this is going to be big, right? But the reality is it's just another game. Whether it's the Stanley Cup, I know that sounds like a little ridiculous, the Stanley Cup or game one of the year, it's still just the hockey game. Bigger stage and all that stuff, but what you put in your head and what you make it out to be is going to be what makes you nervous or puts anxiety and pressure on you, yeah. Right? So the sooner that everybody, mom, dad, and player understand that it's just another game, the anxiety or the nerves can go away.
Yeah, it can be mitigated.
If you understand
for sure.
That there's a guy on the other team, like a real, like I say in junior, there's a guy that's just a goon, and he's going out there to try to do goon stuff. It's like if you think about that all day, you will be nervous, right? It's the fighter that knows that he's looking at the schedule 3 days down the road that he goes, okay, I'm going to have to tangle this guy. It's like, of course he can't sleep. That's what you're thinking about. So coaches, that's what I would always say, is stay present. Learn how to, like, read a book about staying present. Read a book about staying in the moment and controlling what you can control. Because the end of the day, that's all it is. Did we practice hard? Have you practiced, you know, like as an individual, have you practiced hard? Can you shoot a puck? Can you skate? Do you understand my systems? Okay. All right. You now go do what you can control. And you can't control it 5 minutes before the game or 2 seconds before the game. When you control it is when you're actually playing. So it's teaching the kids as a coach to stay in the moment. And I would spend time on that with kids. Right? Just spend time on that. It's very, very important because, I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but I want people to really understand that. It's like, okay, how do I do it though? Here's simple exercise. Let's think about something earlier in the day, how you felt, whatever it was earlier in the day. Let's dwell on it. Let's just beat that. Like, does it matter anymore? What can you do about it? Like, what can you do about, let's say you, I'm trying to think of something here. Give me something.
Well, I would do it a different way. I would talk about more the being in the moment thing. Like the easiest thing for me is like doing the breath exercise, like doing the breath work game. That's the best. So like you get a kid. So like if you take a kid that has never done any of this before, it's like, okay, I want you to count your breaths, right? Have them count. They'll get to like 7 and then they'll be distracted or they'll think of something else. And I'll be like, did you lose count? And they'll be like, oh no, I didn't lose count, but they're actually lying and they did lose count and whatever. And then you can start, you drill that and you can see, you can show them like, this is how your brain works. Like, this is what happens. It's like you start to spin out. So like, I need you to focus on your breathing right now, but you're thinking about what you had at McDonald's 2 days ago, right? It's like, I need you to think about your, so you can use that to illustrate the idea of, this is what happens when you're worked up about something. Your mind will just spin on the thing that happened before, or it's spinning about the thing that's going to happen. But what you need to do right now is play hockey. What you need to do right now is go out for this shift and focus on getting the puck and doing that. And so now you have something to relate it to. It's like they felt what it feels like, you know? Because yes. So that's kind of the way that I would do
okay.
That.
So that's awesome. So where I was going with that is basically the same, but I wanted to show, like, I wanted to give an example of nothing you could do about it. So like you used McDonald's, went to McDonald's. Okay. So let's use that example. So if I'm trying to teach a kid, like, okay, so give me something that you did today that you wish you didn't do or you thought about. Okay. I went to McDonald's and I shouldn't have. I don't feel that good. Okay. So want to talk about it more? Do you want to beat that up? Like, you're an idiot. I shouldn't have done that. Or I don't know if I'm going to have the best game because I went to McDonald's and I had this. And it's like, the point is you can't do anything about it now. That's done. You made that mistake or even if you did something really good today, like it's like, okay, but that's done. It's over with. Like, it's understanding that no matter what you do, that is done. There's nothing you can do about it. So, and then thinking about something after the game or whatever, any moment of life you think of it after, it's like, but it's not there yet. Can't do anything, right? You scored 3 goals last game. It's good to remember, but it's over. Today's this is now. So the breathing is absolutely the best thing you can do because it teaches you, like, actually when you're breathing, if you're actually, once you get into the thing, there's actually nothing else you can think about. you think about your breath, and it's like so calming and so good. But that's being in the moment. It's amazing. And anyways, that's what I would do. It's like, if find some examples of to the kids so they actually understand, oh yeah, I really can't do anything, right? So if my broken stick, my good stick is broken, like, you can dwell on that, but it's like, okay, but now you have to use this one. So like, dwell on that, or what are we going to do? What can you do right now? Well, mm-hmm. I can use this stick. Okay, then use it.
Right.
That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah, for
that's
sure.
All, that's a problem solver right there.
It's a real, really, really good exercise, yeah. man. Really good thing to run yeah. through when it comes to the nerves and anxiety type stuff. And you can do it about anything, about a hockey game, yeah. about a school speech, yeah. about whatever.
Well, like in practice, just like one more thing. If in practice, say a simple example of you've missed three passes or you have missed the net four or five times and you're like beating yourself up. It's like, that's the anxiety piece. So what can you do? As you said, you can go to the side and just take 2 seconds and just breathe it. Breathe it. I'm going to hit the net or see it, visualize it, hit the net. That's something you can do at that time to fix it or dwell on you missed the net.
Yeah, and it's a skill you got to drill like anything
else. Oh, yeah,
it's
not
easy.
Not easy.
It's simple, but it's not easy at all. Okay, last thing, maybe talk a little bit about the role of motivation from the coaching side or even the parent side or even the player side, I guess, motivating yourself or staying motivated. To start off the season, sure, but to keep it going as well, where do you see like that kind of thing playing in as a coach? Because for me, like motivation doesn't really have a huge... It doesn't, and the motivation in the sense of where you, like you feel really motivated, like that doesn't have a huge role for me personally in my life anymore. And I feel like as a coach or even as a trainer, when I'm in here, like I'm not a rah, rah motivator. Like when I get fired up talking, like I'm sure if people listening to the podcast, they've heard me get on a tear where I'm like real fired up about something, but I'm not like a yell and scream and dig into the depths of my soul to make people feel motivated. Like that's just not really a thing that I have. I can use stories a little bit to be motivating. And I think it's more useful at the younger ages because it's easy to get young kids feeling fired up. Because I remember getting that motivated feeling before games and stuff. And I think it can be a useful tool. So what do you think about that from the coaching side, from the parent side, or even for players like motivating themselves?
I don't know if it's like it's good if you can have the ability to tell a story or to dig something up to bring people back to reality. And if it's called motivation, that's great. But I'm not convinced that being a good coach is being a good motivator. And I don't want to think that I wouldn't want every coach to think that they should be. I happen to be good at it, but again, motivation is a very fleeting thing. If you need someone else to motivate you, then you're not motivated. And motivated might get you moving for short term. It changes your emotions a bit, but it's more along the lines you need to be driven, or you can use the word motivation, but it needs to come from yourself. So I think the onus is on like, so what a coach, how, if he's not motivated or if you don't believe motivation works, or if you can do the rah-rah, but it's still not working or does, but whatever, I think the most important thing is that you have a, like the philosophy and the standards and the systems or whatever, the way that you're going to play. And then a good motivator would be like the reward system of good job, like especially when they're young. Good job, that's right. And when things are clicking, right? Because motivating someone when they've done something, made a mistake, that's not motivation. You're not motivating them, right? So I think it's just hard for a coach to have the onus on him to be a motivator, but you could always tell an inspiring story, or you could always bring something like, but some guys can't do it, man.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, it's more of instead of using motivation, use like purpose, right? Use a purpose, because that's a way more effective driver than just being motivated for a few minutes because you told a story. So if you can do that, that's a bonus. Like that's great on top of it. But I think if, you know, you can play into a kid's psyche of what they want, you know, where like if a kid says, you know, I want to play in the NHL, or I want our team to be the best, or I want whatever the purpose is that you've figured out because you're a good coach and you've talked to the kids and you've done all those things we always talk about, then I don't believe you need to be like that. Like, I think for me, especially with guys that are in the gym, like I always say, like my spiel to them is never rah-rah. It's always just like, listen, you said you want this. If you want this, this and this and this and this is what I recommend you do. If you don't do it, you won't get that thing that you said. And now it's up to you. Like, that's kind of what I say.
Motivating gets very tiresome, yeah, too.
Right.
Because what happens is...
Like, as a player, you mean? Like, hearing the motivating thing?
No, I'm saying as a coach. Mm. Because it's my nature, right? To find good and to, like, this is good. And like, it's my nature. It's I can do it very well. But then you see guys that you're giving way more than they want to listen to. They, maybe you don't even know they're listening to. Yeah. Right? So it's like... It agreed with you 1,000%. It's there was a good word that you use is purpose, because if, or what I always say, dream obstacle, dream bigger than the obstacle, then you have motivation. So you got to find as a coach, and it is your job to find out if you want the best of them, to find out the dream, to find out what makes them tick, and that's your leverage.
Yeah, and the other part too that I want to relate to coaches, because I've said this before, I remember this about coaches too, is players call bullshit. So when you're trying to be rah-rah motivator guy, and it's like you're fat and out of shape, or you're lazy, or you're always late, or you smell like cigarettes, or you, whatever the thing is that is your vice, that clearly we can see that you don't look to be that motivated, sir. It's not that hard to read as a kid. It's hard. So your motivating story might work for a little bit, but I remember being like 12 and looking at my coach that was giving me a rah-rah speech, just like, shut up.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe I didn't think I was 12.
It's not authentic either.
Because it doesn't seem authentic, right?
I read a really good thing one time, and I used it with a team once. And it was 212. You know what 212 is? You're an engineer, man. 212 is the temperature which water boils, 212 degrees.
Oh, Fahrenheit. Sorry. Fahrenheit. Yeah, I got you. Yeah. My bad.
So at the point of boiling, once it starts to boil, water or steam has incredible power. And that power has enough power to push a freaking train or a boat, right? And once it gets going, it's like, wow, look at, like, it's unbelievable power coming from water. But if you don't get it to 212... and you keep it at 211, nothing happens. So you can see where I'm going with this. It's like, for me, I have the ability with kids or players or you to say, you're operating at 211 and just that little more, one more degree, and you are pushing a train or whatever. And it's like getting people to believe that and understand. It's like, oh, okay, 212. So I use it as a theme. We'll be on the bench and I'm like, we're at about 210 here, guys. And they would be like, okay, 212, 212. Like, they're kids. And they loved it. They loved it. And then I had someone else. Then someone else said, my wife used to say, you tell them the story about 212. It just doesn't work for no reason. But anyways, then I've seen someone else do it. And it's like, oh, 212. You want the kids to get at 212 degrees, and you're sitting here at about 47. You've got about 190 degrees to go before it even makes sense.
And this is my point. Yeah. This is exactly my point.
So it's got to be natural, though. Like, yes. For that, for me, that stuff moves me. It's like, yeah, okay, if I push that a little bit harder, I'm going to go. But it's in my fiber,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So
that's my caution, because I'm not saying that every coach, you have to have a shredded six-pack and you're the most motivating guy. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying just you have to be genuine. So if you're trying to play the motivator card, and you don't look like, or you don't behave like, or however you want to spin it, like, you actually are doing the things that you're saying, the kids will read it quick, man. It happens quick. Even when they're young, they won't be able to express it. They won't be able to say the words. But I, for myself personally, I vividly remember when I'm like 10, 11, 12, like when I was playing junior, 19, I'm looking at some of my coaches. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You actually, are you being serious? You know, I remember thinking it. So just be careful with the motivation thing, because a lot of coaches, they can try to hide behind the rah-rah, I'm a motivator guy. And it just doesn't work, because it's exactly that reason. It's inauthentic, you know? So,
but this is where family comes in, because kids don't know the difference. So to back it up a notch, it's not the coach's responsibility, and nor is it anybody in the world's responsibility to, if you want to use the word motivate, to motivate you. It's no one's responsibility. I can't wait for my wife to say, hey, yeah, like, let's get going here. Like, no, I don't need that. I can't wait. And a hockey player shouldn't need that. Or actually, I don't want to use the word shouldn't. It's not anyone's responsibility to get you to play hard. Now, having said that, because lack of knowledge, ignorance, a lot of kids don't know the difference between working hard or whatever. So when Charlie was a kid, I would say things like, when he would, I could see where there's points where he was determined. And when he was really determined, he'd grab the puck and or back check really hard, and like really good things would happen, like untouchable. So I would point out that. So did you see that? That was like you were in fifth gear. You most of the time you play at 3-4. Yeah, but you put, when you put in fifth gear, unstoppable, and use situations like, oh, okay, that's and that's what actually every shift should look like to a point. That's what effort is. That's what you got to figure out how to get that to be good. So it's like teaching them how to be self-motivated a bit is good. Like I was saying to the kids today, I said it's not up to anybody to determine the pace you play at. You have to figure it out. It's like that's one of the biggest things I could tell you is like, don't wait for someone else to do it. You have to got to do it, but you got to learn that sometimes, or you're just a driven person.
Right. Yeah. I think that's good. I think that's good. We kind of covered what I wanted to cover. So that's kind of a little primer for season start. We touched a bunch of different stuff. So, as always, any questions on this stuff, we can get it. I mean, each one of these little things we talked about could be a deep dive in itself. So, any other closing remarks? You feel like you're good to
go? No, good. I've talked a lot today.
Yeah, you did, actually. It was good. You did well.
Oh, my.
I know. Okay. See you guys next week. Goodbye.